Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hey there, sports fans. Today is Wednesday, September 25th, and welcome to the Sports King from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm joined by Kevin and Darren. This is episode number 126. You can catch us anywhere you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to leave us some questions and comments, we'll get back to you. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to get started today on the show. NFL going strong, week three in the books, baseball coming to a close, playoffs right around the corner. Let's start with the NFL. We're going to start with the Jets. It was a Thursday night game. Jets dominated the Patriots with Aaron Rodgers throwing two touchdown passes. Jets outgaining the Patriots 400 to 139 in total yards. New England struggled offensively. They only managed a field goal. Kev, let's start it off with the Jets. They moved to 2-1.
And I'll say this. This is meant as a huge compliment. It was a boring Jet game, which we don't get to see too much. Boring in the sense that the Jets were never threatened. It was one of the few times I can remember watching a Jet game thinking they've got this in the bag the whole game. On offense, they moved the ball pretty easily. Even the drives that they had to punt, they had no three and outs. They always picked up at least one or two first downs before they had to punt. They had three touchdowns, a field goal, a missed field goal. And the defense said, this is a bad offensive team that we're playing. Let's go out there and show this. They called a lot more blitzes than they normally do. They were able to get to Brissett and May seven times in total. Patriots had under 100 yards until the last drive of offense. And the Jets themselves put up 400 yards. It was as complete a game as they have played against a clearly inferior opponent. It was so nice to see the Jets actually just go out there and take care of business and do what they had to do and get another win. And just, like I said, without any drama, without any worry about, oh my God, this is going to be close in the fourth quarter. Darren, were those your thoughts too?
Yeah, it was an absolutely relaxing game. And you don't have too many Jet fans there relaxing through games. You have it every now and again, but it's usually in the middle of like a mired season of problems. Rodgers is a difference maker, a major difference maker, even at his age. He looked a little bit more nimble. The touchdown pass to Wilson. Every other Jet quarterback I've ever seen either gets picked for six or it's wildly incomplete. He's able to make that throw, that short throw to the sideline, that we've never seen. Maybe Namath could make the throw, but we never saw him.
That's going back 100 yards against. That's going back 100 yards against any other Jets quarterback we've seen in the last 20 years plus.
Or it's wildly incomplete and it has no shot. And there's no. And you're like, what was the play call? What were we trying to do? He made that throw almost seem effortless. He has total control of the team. The offense players all respect him. The line, you know, obviously we're going to deal without Moses for a couple of weeks going forward, but the line played fine. The running duo is probably the best in the game right now, or at least top three duos in all of NFL right now with Breece and with Braylon Allen. I mean, every time Braylon Allen gets the ball, he falls forward. I mean, he does not get stopped. Breece will occasionally get caught in the backfield, but he's the big play guy. Braylon's just going to run you down. There's so many exciting things to watch about this team, and we're still waiting for the number two receiver to arrive. We need a little bit more from Mike Williams. Conklin had his coming out this week. Now we need Mike Williams to join the offense so we can start being complete, or Corley, or whoever whoever they decide to utilize, Gibson, whoever they want to utilize more, because it's been really a lot of passes to the backs, but really exciting stuff. The defense played great. Ramondre Stevenson, who had been world beater the first 2 weeks, didn't do a thing against the Jets, which helped me win my fantasy league. So I'm happy about that. But that's kind of really where I would leave it. I just think that the Jets with a superior team. And right now, as a Jet fan, you're feeling really good about where this team is going. Everything you didn't feel in week one. Now, Gino and I had this long debate last week about where the Jet defense is coming from. And this is New England, so we can't take it like, oh, the defense is all the way back. So, yeah. I mean, I still take what Gino said seriously last week about that. You show me you're a top five defense. But and they're going to have to blitz to get pressure, which they haven't had to do in the last couple of years as much. But this is the step in the right direction. I think you'd agree, G, right, that the defense at least showed up this week.
I would agree. I don't want you guys to get too crazy, though. I'm glad you said it that way. It is New England. We expect this team to be one of the bottom three or four teams in the league. But listen, when you're a good team, this is what you do. You go out there, and the teams you're supposed to beat, you go out and beat. Okay? The week before, it was Tennessee. You're supposed to beat them. You went out and beat them. Last week, it was New England. You went out there, and you beat them. There's no fooling around. There's no garbage. There's no interception for a touchdown in the last minute that gives you the win. You go out there, and you win. And that's what good teams do. We expect this to be a good team. That's what they went out and did for a second straight week. I expect the same thing coming up this week against Denver, okay? After that, schedule gets a little tougher. We'll get there when we get there. But this is exactly what you do when you're a good team. You go out and you win the games you're supposed to win. You don't ask questions. You don't worry about it. It's a late touchdown that gets you the win. You go out there and you take care of business and get the win. That's exactly what they did. Kev?
I think I didn't overreact to week one when they didn't look good against San Fran. You know, San Fran with most of their players healthy is a far different offense than they show this weekend. But they're still – San Fran's a great offense. I didn't overreact to the Jets not showing up and playing good defense week one. I'm not going to overreact and give them the world of credit for dominating a terrible offensive team either.
Agreed.
They're still a top 10 defense at this moment, at the very least. And hopefully as the season goes along, they get better. Darren, to your point, you know, with Mike Williams, he's coming back from the ACL. Remember last year you had Breece Hall coming back from an ACL. And what did the Jets do? They brought him along slowly the first 4 or 5 weeks, gave him increased workload gradually, and he wound up having a terrific year. So they went through this last year with Breece, and I'm hoping they learned the lessons and that they apply the same type of thing to Mike Williams this year, that you're not looking for him to be the number one guy, but to be the number two guy. You know, hopefully he can start emerging and it slowly increase the workload and increase his productivity as the season goes along, much like Breece did.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kev. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the whole thing is, I'm trying to say that the offense has the running game going, the tight end finally got involved. Garrett Wilson's getting a lot of attention. Now when we're able to get that next level and able to get Mike Williams in there, all of a sudden Rodgers will have everything he needs. And again, Mike Williams gets hurt every 5 minutes, so we might get him great for two games and then that's it. We don't know. But the fact is that you want to see that, and then maybe we start getting the slot receivers going. Yep. So there's a lot of little things that we feel like this team can kind of keep growing offensively. The defensive side of the ball, again, week one was horrendous. Week two, we were disappointed. Week three was a big step up against an inferior opponent. So now we got to see what they do week four against another opponent that they should beat at home. And that's, I guess, where I would leave it with the Jets.
I'll say one other thing. You know, while the offense is still growing, they've scored 3 offensive touchdowns in each of the first 3 games. They didn't score their 9th touchdown last year until game 11. They're 8 games ahead of last year as far as scoring. And this is an offense that's still a work in progress.
Different quarterback, Kev.
That's what makes the difference.
He makes all the difference.
Agreed. All right. So Jets have Denver coming up at home this week. Denver, although they got a win, we'll talk about them in a couple minutes. They should win that game. They should move to 3-1. We expect that right now. After that, as we get there, we'll talk about where the schedule's leading. So
so we can gloss over that game later. I am thrilled that the Broncos won that game. And the one the way they did, because he gives the Jets something on film to look at and say, oh, shit, we do have to take this team a little seriously. They can. You know, this is an NFL team. They can beat somebody else. I think it's good to have on film to show that, hey, Denver won. We can't take these guys lightly. We have to show up and make sure we play.
Okay.
Not identical, but I think that Denver plays a similar style to New England. where their passes are short. The quarterback scrambles a lot. Their running game isn't as good. Javonte Williams has not been nearly as good as Ramondre Stevenson, let's be honest. Knicks has led them in rushing almost every week so far. But the fact is that, again, it's not a team that's going to try to test you deep too much. And I do think that that benefits the Jets. They can play more aggressively. They can blitz a little bit more. There's a lot of things that come to the table with that. But, you got to play the game.
Bo Nix can't throw down the field.
We'll see what happens.
Bo Nix doesn't have an arm to throw down the field. So
yep.
He just does. He's a game manager.
All right, the other New York team, they get a win, 21-15 over Cleveland. They move to 1-2. New York controlled the game after an early fumble and a Cleveland touchdown, outgaining the Browns 340 to 217 yards. This despite two touchdowns by Amari Cooper. Cleveland's offense really struggled. Giants capitalized with a balanced attack, three red zone touchdowns. Singletary looked good. Daniel Jones did not look so bad. The Giants get a win. They are now 1-2. Any comments, guys? Dad?
Yeah, I mean, listen, eight sacks by the Giants. Linebackers were solid. The D-line was great. Dexter Lawrence has become the best player on that team. And Neighbors is growing quickly, by the way. Malik Neighbors had another great game. I mean, he's playing fantastic. But Dexter Lawrence had two sacks, and he really does hold the fort. I thought this Giant defense would be good. They showed it against Cleveland. Much like the Jets, the Cleveland offense is just not very good. There are some names there. They're a little banged up on the offensive line. Willis came back, and he got hurt right away. So they lost two linemen this week as well. And, Deshaun Watson is a shell of what he was a few years back when we thought he was an emerging player, or even at Clemson. He's just awful. He doesn't know how to read pressure. He holds on to the ball too long. He doesn't try to escape enough. And to be honest with you, it's kind of embarrassing. The thing with Daniel Jones, I would say, is, again, great first half, no second half. He threw for like 170 in the first half and like 50 yards in the second half. He can never put two halves together, this guy. And, even the I think it was the second touchdown, the Neighbors made an incredible catch on it. He was wide open, and he almost missed him in the back of the end zone. Not trying to kill Daniel Jones. He won the game. But he's not the answer because he can't put two halves together. As a Jet fan, I watched this for years. I mean, this is what it is. It's a quarterback that's just going to be a nice, solid backup that can maybe win a two or three game stretch for you as a backup. But he's really not the answer. The Giants going for that fourth down early, down 7-0. They ran to sweep the Neighbors. He got the first down. It was a huge play. I hate wide runs on fourth down. It worked. We'll get into that again later at a different moment, but I hate wide runs on fourth down. I hate them with a passion. I could live with an off tackle every now and then, but an actual kind of sweep all the way across makes me really nervous. Overall though, good win. I thought the Giants did everything they had to do realistically with a kicker. They could have won the Washington game. They didn't, but they could have. And suddenly the team looks a little bit better than they did before. But again, they're beating one of the teams that is not very good right now in the NFL. Kev?
I mean, 11 seconds into the game, after fumbling the opening kickoff, to be down 7-0, that you could have lost the season, I think, right there. Never mind just the game. That could have been a turning point. That could have lost the season at that point to send them on the spiral. And the fact that they recovered, I mean, the two drives in the first half, 13 plays, 81 yards, 14 plays, 93 yards. That shows the potential. Like you said, Jones can show it in stretches. He can't put it together for the full game. The key, I think, was, the Burns sack and forced fumble of Watson in the first half. Got the ball back with 38 seconds left, and they took advantage. Jones hit Neighbors for that second touchdown, like you said, 21-7. And then in the fourth quarter, once Cleveland got within six, the last three drives, another fumble by Watson. The guy's got to take care of the ball. And then they stopped him on downs twice. The defense stepped up for the Giants big time in that game. And kudos to the Giants for getting another win.
Yeah, as a Cleveland, if you're watching Cleveland, are you looking for Jameis Winston to start coming into these games? Because you can't be happy with what you're seeing from Watson. I know you're paying Watson a ton of money, but my goodness, he does not look like an NFL quarterback at this moment.
Taking out the money as a fan, I'm waiting to see Winston. Because I've seen Watson for the last couple of years now when he's been able to play, and he just looks terrible. This is going on for a couple of years now with Cleveland.
Much better team with Flacco than last year, and then obviously they let him walk for Winston. And really, just on the Giants side again, Jones only had 2 incompletions in the first half. He was throwing darts out there. It was like the Minnesota playoff game that got him the contract. In the second half, he didn't complete 50% of his passes.
Yep.
Almost all of those first half completions, though, are first reads. He's horrible after if the first read is no good, he's horrible after that. It just, you can see it every time. But listen, they got
the win. He doesn't process it fast enough. You're right. No, he does not process fast.
He doesn't.
But all right. Nonetheless, like you said, with the Jets, it's a good win for the Giants. They're on the scoreboard right now. They're tied. They're one game out of first place in the NFC.
All right.
Behind the Washington Commanders and the Eagles.
Okay, let's recap the NFL. So before I get into these recaps, we have 5 teams that are still at 3-0 now. They still have not lost the game. It's Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Minnesota, Seattle. We have 3 teams that haven't won a game yet. All AFC teams, by the way, Cincinnati, Tennessee, and Jacksonville. Just get that out of the way before we start. Denver beats Tampa Bay 26-7. Denver's defense stifled the Bucs' offense. Tampa Bay struggling to gain momentum after the 2-0 start. Broncos controlled the game. Strong performance in both rushing and defense. Knicks looked good. The Bucks only score came in the second quarter. Anything, guys? It's one of those games, man. Let me tell you.
Evans looked invisible, and Baker just did not look like he was in sync at all.
Yeah, yeah. Sertan really shut down Evans that game.
Yep. Pittsburgh took care of the Chargers 20-10. They moved to 3-0. Steelers. The win came with a strong second half performance. They got a 55-yard touchdown pass from Justin Fields to Calvin Austin III. Steelers defense shut down the Chargers offense after halftime, helping Pittsburgh to remain undefeated. My buddy Dave was at the game, by the way. Darren?
Steelers have not given up more than 10 points in any game this season. The defense is playing lights out right now. Does Fields keep the job? Does Fields keep the job when Wilson is healthy?
You have to.
I agree, Kevin.
I agree.
I mean, come on. Unless Fields starts to struggle at some point along the way where you have to make the move, I keep Fields in there. You know what Wilson
He hasn't played great in any games, but he's doing enough to win every game.
He's not turning the ball over, playing mistake-free, and that's all they need right now with that way that defense is going. And the Chargers, you know, Herbert gave it a shot with a sprained ankle. Obviously looked compromised out there. He didn't look good at all. Partly the ankle. A lot of the credit goes to that Steeler defense, which has been lights out so far.
Agreed. All right. Green Bay beats Tennessee 30-14. They move to 2-1. Green Bay gets the win with Jair Alexander's pick 6 and a strong defensive performance sealing the win. Malik Willis led the Packers with a touchdown pass and a rushing touchdown. Titans struggled to recover after Green Bay took a 20-7 halftime lead. Jordan Love return coming soon, apparently, and Green Bay is now 2-1. Darren?
8 sacks. That'll do it every time. Green Bay had 8 sacks. I mean, it was a lot of sacks this weekend. I don't know if you guys noticed. There were a lot of games with 6, 7, 8 sacks. This was one of them. I thought that they played outstanding. Defensively, and Willis is doing enough to win.
That's it.
3 more turnovers by Levis.
Yeah.
And LaFleur, you know, really adapting his game plan to fit what Willis can do best. And not running the Jordan Love offense, running an offense for Malik Willis so that he can thrive.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Philadelphia beats New Orleans 15-12. Eagles edged out the Saints with Saquon Barkley scoring 2 late touchdowns, including a game-winning 2-point conversion. Crucial interception by Reed Blankenship in the final moment secured the victory for the Eagles. By the way, Kev, we talk about this bet in the Super Bowl all the time. Barkley had the octopus, by the way. He had the touchdown followed by the 2-point conversion for 8 points.
He actually had 14 of the 15 points. He scored the other touchdown as well.
I make that bet every Super Bowl, and it actually happened to the game, Kev. I thought you'd find that music.
There you go.
Yeah, Philly actually dominated the game. They had double the yardage of New Orleans. They were sloppy. Hurts has not played well yet. He really has not looked sharp at all. And without it, without Brown, it's a different team on that offense, because Brown is the guy that he's the guy that you can't cover. Okay, he's the big receiver with speed that is so hard to cover. Smith got banged up in this game. He got tackled a little bit dirty, so he got hurt. And even with that, you know, the Saints had the lead most of the way, but Saquon had a huge game. Goddard had a huge game.
There's 3-0 going into the fourth, and all of a sudden, here comes the points. Like I said, Barkley had the 2 touchdowns, 17 carries for 147 yards. The first touchdown was a 65-yarder, and then the game winner was set up on the 61-yard play on 3rd and 16 to Goddard.
Yep.
You don't expect that.
Goddard had 178 yards receiving.
Yeah.
Philly's offensive line has also been a problem for him too. Combination of the injuries and those guys just not playing up to that what they're usually capable of. That's also not giving Jalen enough time back there. You could see it. Minnesota beats Houston 34-7. They move to 3-0. Vikings dominated with Sam Darnold throwing 4 touchdown passes, leading to a very efficient Viking offense. Texans struggled to generate momentum, scoring only a late touchdown. Vikings defense shut down their passing and rushing attack. They get the victory. Darren?
Grenard had 3 sacks against his former team. Vikings had 5 sacks in the game. 2 interceptions to Stroud, which never happens, but both were kind of freakish. Both kind of deflections. It wasn't like he threw bad passes. Because Stroud doesn't turn the ball over. But yet you haven't seen Houston grounded this easily in a long time. So very well played by Minnesota, who just kind of steamrolled them early, and it was never a game.
Yeah. Houston has to go out there and put this game behind them and just say it's one of those games that happen once in a while. That would be the best thing for them.
Justin Jefferson looked really good in this game, by the way. First time this season, he looked really, really good. Indianapolis gets the win, 21-16 over Chicago. Jonathan Taylor led the Colts with 2 rushing touchdowns. Caleb Williams threw for 363 and 2, but the Colts held on as the Bears' comeback fell short in the fourth quarter. Darren?
Caleb only looked good in the fourth quarter. The first 3 quarters, he played like crap. He should have thrown a pick 6, but the Indianapolis defensive back, I'm forgetting his name, stepped out of bounds as he was catching it. Like, he had the sideline clear. Maybe this fourth quarter propels him to start playing a little bit better, but we haven't seen anything. Like, gee, you were so big on Hard Knocks, and you were high on how he played there, and he has not looked good at all. I think it's a theme for a bunch of quarterbacks, and then quarterbacks we're not expecting to play well are playing well. It's a little bit wild. But, you know, great win for the Colts, and, you know, Chicago could easily be 0-3 if Tennessee didn't give them that opening week win.
Yeah, yep. Richardson didn't look good either, though. 10 for 20 for 167 and 2 picks. I mean, he was matching Williams.
I mean,
we watched him in Florida.
He couldn't complete passes in college.
Yeah.
Listen, Richardson is going to be that guy that's going to be a fantasy guy everybody likes, and he's not going to win games. He's going to be a guy that's going to scramble, score a touchdown here, throw for a couple of touchdowns, throw the ball down the field with the big arm, and make some plays, and he's going to make so many boneheaded plays that the Colts are going to lose because he's not a good quarterback, and he won't be starting in 2 years from now. One man's opinion.
Yep. All right. Carolina takes care of the Raiders, 36-22. Panthers dominated the Raiders with Andy Dalton at quarterback, securing a convincing victory. Raiders had a late surge, but the Panthers put on a strong performance. It was too much to overcome. Carolina gets their first victory, 36-22. Seattle moves to 3-0. They beat Miami, 24-3. Geno Smith threw for 289 and had 2 rushing touchdowns from Zach Charbonnet. Dolphins struggled offensively and faced further quarterback uncertainty after Skylar Thomas suffered a rib injury, leaving Tim Boyle to man the quarterback position. Seahawks became the first team since 1979 to start season 3-0 while holding opponents under 150 passing yards in each game so far. Seattle defense playing well. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned the Skylar Thompson thing. I mean, that's the whole thing. Skylar's not a great backup. We've seen Boyle. We've seen that show before. He's not a good quarterback. Tyreek Hill, if you drafted him in the first round of your fantasy league, I'm sorry. Jalen Waddle, when you took him in the second round, I'm sorry for you too. Ayshon is not gonna is gonna be okay, but he's gonna be keyed on so much, and they're gonna dare him to throw. And I don't think Miami can do that. Obviously, the Miami fans are hoping Tua comes back. I think that anybody medically or that cares about this guy is hoping he doesn't come back, but we're gonna find out as it goes. I think they have to sign a veteran to kind of step in there and not live with the Skylar Thompson, even if he's healthy, or the Boyle, even though he's a veteran, he's just a crappy veteran.
Kevin? At what point in the offseason did the Miami Dolphins look at the game film from last year with Tim Boyle and the Jets and say, ooh, there's my backup quarterback in case something happens, or my third-string quarterback?
It was Black Friday. We all had to watch it. It was the national game. Everybody saw it.
They played against the Dolphins. Wasn't it? Didn't they play the Dolphins that game?
Dolphins. Everybody saw it.
What point in that game did the Dolphins say, at what point did the Dolphins say, oh, that's a quarterback we need to take on our team?
Unbelievable.
And going back to the
pictures on somebody.
Kev, let's not throw stones after last year's Jet quarterback disaster. Let's not throw stones.
It was one of those houses. Tim Boyle was on the Jets.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Look, just going back real quick.
The Rams beat Jet.
I know you glossed them over them, but boy, what is this show for Bryce Young? When does he ever see the field again? What do you think, Darren?
Well, here's the thing. I saw an interview with Alex Smith, who basically was like ripping the Panther organization for playing this kid right away. And just saying he's like, you know, I sat, Mahomes sat, Rodgers sat, a lot of these great quarterbacks sat. I know because of the money, everybody plays right away. But this kid was not ready to play, and they didn't put the supporting cast around him. We saw it with the Jets with Darnold. I mean, You don't put the supporting cast. These guys can't win. And just the difference of having a veteran quarterback. All of a sudden, Chuba Hubbard's running all over the place. Thielen made an incredible touchdown catch. He got hurt on the play. Deontay Johnson was all over the place the week before. He's saying, why did I sign here? What was I thinking? And now he's, you know, I don't think you're going to see him play quarterback until Dalton gets injured.
That's why I think the Patriots do the right thing, not playing May.
I think you're right. I think you're 100% right.
All right. We'll see. Rams, they beat San Francisco 27-24. Rams pulled off a stunning 27-24 comeback victory, overcoming a 14-point deficit in the second half. Kyren Williams scored 3 touchdowns, including the game winner with under 2 minutes left. Stafford helped rally the team's first, avoiding the first team's 0-3 start under McVay. 49ers struggled to close this game out despite Juwan Jennings' impressive performance with 3 touchdown catches, leaving both teams with a 1-2 record. Darren?
Yeah, I love Matthew Stafford. I think whenever he has a minute and he's got a chance to get his team into a game, this guy finds a way to get his team into the game. He's that old school gritty quarterback that may not put up big numbers every single week. With the Rams, he did with the Lions when they were losing a lot. But the Rams show a lot. I mean, I know San Francisco's playing without Debo and they're playing without McCaffrey. I get it. Rams are playing without Nakua. They're playing without Kupp. They're playing without 3 starting offensive linemen. I mean, Kyren Williams is sitting there keyed on the entire game, and he found a way to get in the end zone 3 times. Stafford's throwing the ball downfield to backup receivers, and they're making plays. Tutu Atwell made a huge play late. They got blown out in Arizona, but generally this is a fun team to watch. I know I picked them to go to the Super Bowl, and they're not going to get there with the injuries that they're dealing with now unless they're able to hold it together while they're doing it. But there's something about this team I like, and there's something about McVay as a coach I enjoy.
Yeah. Okay, elsewhere, Detroit beats Arizona 2013. They moved to 2-1. Goff led the victory, throwing 2 touchdown passes and completing 18 of his first 23 attempts. Despite a scoreless second half of Detroit, defense held strong, limiting Cardinals to just 1 field goal, sealing the win in a crucial late game drive. Darren?
Okay, this game had a couple of interesting things happen. We had the hook and ladder touchdown late in the second quarter, which I thought was great. The pass to Brown and the flip to Gibbs. And nobody's going to be able to defend it with that speed on those two guys. Impossible. Arizona has the pick 6 to tie it, and they say that the 2-minute warning went right before the play was snapped. Arizona would have tied this game up. They had the pick 6, and they called it back. They ruled it a dead play, and everybody was playing that play. It wasn't like everybody stopped and they did it.
Yep.
He had the pick 6. They ruled the 2-minute warning. pick six overturned, and Detroit's able to hold on and win. Again, Detroit played better than Arizona did in this game, but at the same time, Arizona had that very unlucky thing of the ball being snapped maybe a quarter of a second too late.
Yep. Baltimore beat Dallas 28-25. Baltimore secured the win with two touchdown passes from Lamar and a standout 151-yard, two-touchdown effort from Derrick Henry. After building a 28-6 lead through three quarters, Baltimore was able to hold on even after a 19-point fourth-quarter rally from the Cowboys. With the win, Baltimore moves to 1-2, avoiding their first 0-3 start since 2015. Dallas at 1-2, Baltimore at 1-2 through three games. Didn't think we were going to see that. Darren?
Pet peeve, 28-12. Don't go for two. Stop. Kick the extra point. This guy, Aubrey, doesn't miss from 70. Let him kick the extra point, take the point. Then you score another touchdown. Go for one again. You only have to go for two once, but do it when you need it. I don't understand these teams and this analytic crap. It doesn't make any sense. It takes no – it's just a statistical thing that's garbage. Kick the extra point. Your kicker is automatic. Take the point. Then you're not chasing it at the end. They got the onside kick. That should have been enough for them to have a chance to tie it up. But because they're so stupid in this league and everybody thinks they have to get 2 points whenever, this is what happens. And it just drives me. Listen, I have no dog in this fight. I don't like either team. I don't really care. I'm not a Dallas fan, and I don't like Baltimore at all either, unless they played the Patriots back in the day. But this is just stupidity. I know that everybody wants to be newfangled, you know, 4th and 9. We go for it inside the 40, whatever. You know, sometimes, but sometimes just be prudent. Guys like Bill Parcells and Bill Walsh and other legendary coaches, Parcells is the one that I always remember saying it, you don't chase points. You take your points. You chase them at the end. You know what? If this game was 28 to 10, and when you scored somehow, you had four for some strange reason. I'm just throwing a weird number out there. And you had a chance to cut it to a two-score game at that point by getting it to 12, I would do it. But you're already within the two-score game. Why give up the point? I just don't understand the stupidity. I just don't get it. I know I'm old, but it's just dumb. I know Kev agrees with me.
I'm the Bill Parcells guy too that says take your damn point until you have to go for
can
it.
Can Aubrey hit from 75?
I think he might be able to.
He could.
And you know what? If they got the ball back down three, late, I think he would have had a shot anywhere between 60 and 75. And he probably and I'm not saying he hits it because he had to pick it low. He'd have a shot.
All right. Sunday night, Kansas City beat Atlanta 22-17. They moved to 3-0. Mahomes threw a pair of touchdown passes. Kansas City defense made a couple of late stands to keep Kansas City unbeaten. Kirk Cousins threw a pair of incompletions in the end zone from the Chiefs 6 to end the last chance. Final drive ended with Bijan Robinson being thrown for a 3-yard loss on a 4th-and-1 at the Kansas City 13. Kev, you want to start?
Yeah, let me go for the non-Chief fan first. You know what?
That's why I went to you.
Yes, the Chiefs got a break on the non-pass interference call.
That was a pass interference.
That was a break. But let's remember on that last Atlanta drive there, there was a hands to the face call in the Chiefs defense. There was a pass interference call in the Chiefs defense. There was a horse collar tack on the Chiefs defense. And Atlanta had the ball 3rd and 1 at the 13. Algier, why are you not giving it to Robinson up the middle there or something? He got stuffed for no gain. And then when they did give it to Robinson, he lost 3 because he was running outside, right?
Stop running wide on 4th and 1.
So,
I knew this was coming.
Atlanta got the penalty calls on that last drive to get them in position. They screwed up on offense. 3rd and 1 of the 13, you have to convert. That's on the Falcons. It got nothing to do with the referees at that point. Darren, as a Chiefs fan, I'll let you go.
No, it was pass interference. The thing about the Chiefs is they don't look sharp at all offensively right now. Steele, I thought, did a very nice job. Hunt was elevated this week. I have a hunch he'll be seeing some more carries than Piron. I think Steele will stay in there. It was an interesting story that his sister was getting married that night. I wasn't expected to be in the NFL. He was supposed to be a groomsman. They're watching the game at the wedding. The whole thing was really nice. But the fact is that Kelsey's been invisible, and yeah. Mahomes has been less than stellar. Let's put it that way. The Chiefs are 3-0 without getting these guys clicking yet, because the defense has been carrying them. And the thing about the Chiefs defense is they have been one to always improve as the season has gone on. So I think they're only going to get a little stronger. They do need a little bit of a pass rush, but Omenihu should be back soon, which will help. Listen, they held on for dear life. Atlanta's got a lot of skill players. They lost a couple of linemen in that game too, which I think hurt them.
Okay, we move to Monday night. Two games. First game, Buffalo destroys Jacksonville 47-10, moves to 3-0, Jacksonville to 0-3. Josh Allen threw 4 touchdown passes. Bills dominate the unraveling Jaguars. And then the second game, my Commanders beat Cincinnati 38-33 in a stellar performance by rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels. He led the way by throwing 2 touchdowns, rushing for another, while setting the NFL rookie record with a completion percentage of 91.3%, despite Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow's strong outing. The Bengals struggling to keep pace, falling to 0-3 as Washington scored on every possession except for kneel downs. Before I get to you guys, Washington has now scored in every drive in back-to-back games, excluding kneel downs. It's 8 drives from Monday, and then and then 7 drives in the Giant games. The odds calculated by Vegas on this to happen are 1 in 13,000. The Commanders did this twice in a row, making it a $1.7 million feat if someone had bet on this to happen. Just a little note there. What do you guys think? Do I got a quarterback this year or what? Finally.
You do, pal. Go ahead, Kev.
Bills game, thank God there was a second Monday night game, so we didn't have to sit through only that game. I mean, Buffalo was up so much. Buffalo called 3 pass plays the second half. That's how much they dominated the first half. 34-3 at halftime. Probably the best part of that game was probably Hamlin getting the interception in the first half after what happened 2 years ago in Monday Night Football, so I thought that was a real great moment for Hamlin there. The other game, like you said, Gino, you have the stats there. You know, 6 scoring drives, 2 kneel downs. Last week was 7 scoring drives, 1 kneel down. The difference this week, they punched it into the end zone instead of settling for field goal design every damn drive. Daniels looked real good. As my wife and I were watching the game, my wife turns to me and says, "How skinny is he?" And I said, "That's going to be the only issue with Daniels is his skinniness. If he can pull up, but that's the only thing that can hold him back. I think it's getting hurt because he's too skinny." Darren,
well, let's start with Jacksonville. Okay, the Giants were 0-2 and they showed up. Okay, Denver was 0-2, they showed up. Carolina 0-2, they showed up. The Ravens were 0-2, they showed up. The Rams were 0-2, they showed up. What the hell is wrong? And Cincinnati showed up. They didn't win, but they showed up. Jacksonville didn't show up. I mean, again, 2 years ago, we're sitting there saying Trevor Lawrence is going to win 8 division titles in a row and he's the next Peyton Manning and all this stuff with the skill set. It's not him and Peterson. It's not working. Whatever they're doing ain't working. And they're not showing up offensively or defensively right now.
8 straight starts that Lawrence has lost for Jacksonville going back to last year.
It's disgusting. On the other side, Gino, Daniels is a player. I mean, you have a legitimate, you know, upper end quarterback right now. If you were to watch the two of them, and it's early, it's 3 games, you would say that Daniels is better than Caleb. We don't know how it's going to end up. I'm just saying what's going to happen. What it looks like right now, I should say. But the Cincinnati defense scares me a little bit. They couldn't get off the field in big spots at home. This team, when you look at their schedule, they had New England and Washington at home in the first 3 weeks with a game at Kansas City. The only game they really had a shot to win was the game at Kansas City. They lost the 2 teams that they're supposed to beat at home. Washington's for real. Dallas isn't great. Philly hasn't shown to be great. The Giants certainly aren't great. I mean, all 4 of these teams could be even to a certain extent. I think the Giants are a little step below right now because of the quarterback play. And I think your Washington team, actually, even though I think that this week might be a little bit of a tough one on the road at Arizona, coming off that big win on Monday, traveling across the country on the short week, But that's the only thing that I think gives them a little trouble this week, because Daniels hasn't had to do that yet. But they look great. The offensive line protected against Hendrickson really well. I thought that the O-line, which I'm not high on going in, and I didn't like the guys that they signed that much, I thought they played excellent. And I think Daniel's speed covers up for a lot of it.
I agree with that. I do worry exactly what you guys have been talking about, though, through the first 3 weeks of the season. I do worry about Daniels, the way his body does not look like the guy who's going to take too many hits and still be okay. But he's taken a couple of hits and he's gotten up with no problem. So for me, I just got to hope that he continues doing that and Washington stays the way they are right now. They're playing really well. All right, let's move over to college football. Darren?
Okay, couple of games just to touch on real quick, just to give you some scores from last week, and then we're going to delve into a couple of the bigger games. LSU over at UCLA, 16th right there, LSU, 34-17. This game was tied at the half. LSU had two long drives second half to put it away. Harold Perkins got hurt. He's their all-everything on defense. That's a big loss for LSU. Clemson, 59-35. Remember we said Clemson had no offense? Last week they exploded on App State. This week they exploded on NC State. Kev?
45-7 at halftime. They've got three fourth-quarter touchdowns to make it look even that close.
Yeah, NC State came back on Louisiana the week before. They haven't looked good at all. I don't know how this team was ever ranked. Ohio State blew out Marshall, not even really worth going into. Iowa State crushed Arkansas State, blew them out. Louisville, blocked field goal for a touchdown, helped them hold off Georgia Tech. Closer game than expected, but Georgia Tech's a pretty good team. Notre Dame was easy over Miami of Ohio, never threatened. Penn State, 56-0 over Kent. Last 2 weeks combined, 127-0. Kent has been outscored by Tennessee and Penn State back-to-back. I know that they made about $2.4 million on these games, but wow, being outscored 127-0 in 2 weeks seems like a lot. Miami pulled away from USF 50-15. USF led 15-14 in this game. Ward threw for 404 and three touchdowns. Not Kevin, but, you know, the Ward that plays for
my brother Cam.
Miami. Ole Miss 52, Georgia Southern 13, Dart 382 and four touchdowns. I'm only highlighting those two guys statistically in a lot of ways because I think they're the front runners for the Heisman with the stats they've been putting up.
Yep.
Arch Manning got his first start. Texas rolled over ULM 51-3, but it was only 15-29.
Yeah, ULM's sorry, great quarterback, General Booty. Yeah. That's best name in college football.
Absolutely. 15-29 for 257. He threw two interceptions along with the touchdowns as well. Buffalo gets by previously unbeaten Northern Illinois, 23-20. A pick six in the second half helped kind of put that away. Held NIU to 6 points in the second half. BYU, Kansas State, interesting game. 38-9 doesn't seem interesting. Kansas State was up 6-0 in this game. BYU came down, and they dominated. They just had two long drives, a couple penalties other than the field goals. BYU comes down and gets a field goal. The very next drive, a fumble return for a touchdown for BYU. It goes 10-6. Then the next two plays later, interception, and they throw a score, a touchdown in the first play, 17-6 at the half before you can bat an eyelash. Then they had a punt return for a touchdown in the second half, and they just steamrolled. But Kansas State almost fell out of the poll. They fell down 10 spots. Texas A&M, 26-20 over Bowling Green being the other one. And, you know, A&M never pulled away. It was always somewhat competitive, but they kind of held on. But a few games to kind of touch on for this week, Kev. Let's start in Norman. Tennessee Volunteers, 25-15, not a typical score we see in college football, but, you know, it happens from time to time. But you get the two fives in your pool and it actually hits. What were your thoughts on Tennessee this week?
Impressive defense. More than obviously, they only put up 25, which is pretty – light for Tennessee. This was 22-3 going into the fourth quarter. And Tennessee, like I said, defensively dominated. And Oklahoma's got issues at quarterback. I mean, they started Jackson Arnold. He was only 7 for 16 for 54 and an interception. They pulled Tim Hawkins, at least got a little thing going in the second half. 11 for 18, 132, threw a touchdown. They are making the switch next week to Hawkins. But I thought this Tennessee's defense showed that they are for real, and they're going to be a handful in the SEC if they can play that level of defense against the big boys in the SEC. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, I always think, like, when you're looking at a highlight game, like a feature game on a Saturday night on the road whether it be SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, doesn't matter. But going to Norman under the lights is always going to be a challenge. I screwed it up just now. Did not have a huge game, but he did throw the ball down the field a little bit. I thought Tennessee kind of self-destructed a little bit. They should have won this game a little bit bigger, a little bit easier. But at the same point in time, like you said, if they play this caliber of defense, this is the sleeper team in the SEC. This is the team that can score with you and play physical with you. And they showed it in a big stage. I was really impressed with them.
Especially when you figure this was Oklahoma's first SEC home game. You expected them to really pull out all the stops, being the new conference and all. And for Tennessee to go in there and dominate defensively like they did was super impressive to me.
I agree. Another one I want to touch on is, let's talk Michigan USC for a second, Kev. You have anything about that game that stood out to you specifically?
I thought USC was going to win it. You know, I was so down on Michigan after their no-show against Texas a couple weeks ago, and they were down, and then Mullins, you know, with the 2 minutes left, pulls off a 63-yard run to get it down to 17. And then with 37 seconds left, scores on the 1 yard touchdown plunge there to give Michigan the win. USC faced in 4th and 9. They completed the pass for 8 yards. Good job, buddy. That's right out of the Jet playbook. You know what? Impressive bounce back for Michigan. You know, especially being at home, you didn't want to lose another home game against another big team there in USC. So great win for Michigan. They needed that desperately.
Yeah, Michigan rushed for 290 and threw for 32. So if a team and we talked about it in the preview, USC does not stop the run. They didn't do it well last year. Obviously not doing it well this year. Mullings had a really nice game overall. Williams also played well in the backfield. Orji can't throw, but they threw for 32 yards passing. I mean, and they won the game. And that's because they didn't have to. They didn't have to do it. Michigan's going to rely on running and defense. And if a team's able to sit there and stop their running attack, they're going to be in trouble. We've seen it already. Missouri Vanderbilt was one that we didn't expect to be as close as it was, Kev.
Vandy's been pretty gritty this year so far. They're really showing something. They have a chance to maybe pull off a win or two here in the SEC, which says a lot for them given the last few years here. This went to double overtime. Vanderbilt Newberry scored the 4 yard touchdown run with 21 seconds left in the third quarter. Fourth quarter, both teams wound up trading missed field goals. Missouri missed 2 from 40 and 46. Vanderbilt missed from 50 all in the fourth quarter. They go into overtime. They trade touchdowns in the first overtime. Missouri hit the field goal in the second overtime, and Vandy missed a 31-yarder. That gives Missouri the win.
The kid 31. Hit a 57-yarder earlier, too. I mean, that's the funny part. He missed a 50 and 31. He hit a 57. Now, Vandy on the road at Missouri. Was Missouri looking past them? They were going into a bye. I can't see it, but they're not
going to the bye. I think Vandy's a little grittier this year than they've been. I think that's going to be the key. They've got a little moxie. I think they're showing it, and you know they're going to pull off an upset here this year that you don't expect.
I kind of agree with you on that. I've been impressed with watching them every week. The one bad loss was the lowest I forget the team that they played, but they played, I think it was a MAC team and lost it. But they've been playing pretty well overall. Illinois-Nebraska was the Friday night feature matchup, 24 versus 22. Altmaier threw his 4 touchdown passes. First time 4-0 for Illinois since 2011. First time they've beaten 2 ranked teams since 2007. Raiola's going to be good, by the way. The kid really, I mean, he's a true freshman. The kid is lighting it up all over the place. But Illinois on the road in Lincoln, again, night game, loud as hell there. Very impressed by what Illinois was able to pull off in that game. I thought Nebraska was going to win that game, so I was a little bit surprised, a little taken aback, but it was definitely a very cool game. Utah 22, Oklahoma State 19. No rising, I guess no problem. You play Zach's little brother. And
Isaac.
Isaac Wilson. And listen, they ran the ball really well. That was kind of what happened. Oklahoma State didn't storm back to late in the fourth.
Yeah, it was 22-3 in the fourth quarter. Okie State scored 2 touchdowns and 2 two-pointers to make it close. Like I said, without Cam Rising, they were able to run the ball, and Utah playing their great defense like they normally do.
A couple of games that I would say, but that were not top 25 games. I'm just going to tease about this one. Washington State 458, San Jose State 56. Washington State had stormed back. San Jose State jumped on them second and third quarter. I told you there'd be an over. The over was 57 in this game. And I really didn't worry about it after the second quarter. You know, but again, shootout. Washington State is now technically the 26th ranked team in the nation because they the highest team of receiving votes. But really interesting game, high scoring game. San Jose State played really tough with them, Kev.
Yeah, double overtime game, and I guess in double overtime the rule was changed a couple of years ago. You have to go for two. Washington State made theirs after their touchdown. San Jose missed theirs, and therefore 54-52 in double overtime.
Yeah, Navy 56, Memphis 54. 1,222 yards of total offense in this one, Kev.
Yeah. I mean, you don't expect to see service academies put up 56 against another equal or bigger school than them. I mean, I think Memphis is on that same type of level as Navy as far as talent. The 86-yard interception return to seal the win. But you don't expect the Navy game to go to 100.
And Navy threw for 200 yards in this game as well. Yep. And Army and Navy both undefeated, which is cool if they both stay going that way. SMU 66, TCU 42. Dykes gets ejected in the third after an overturned kick return for a touchdown. Any thoughts on this on the Battle of Dallas-Fort Worth?
108 points in that game, 5 turnovers by TCU. SMU scored on a 51-yard fumble return, a 69-yard punt return, and a 60-yard pick six. Nice to put up you know, 21 points away, there. Gets the numbers going up.
They still win 45-42 if they take those away.
Yeah.
Colorado 38, Baylor 31. Hail Mary at the gun, Kev.
Yeah. Wester gets open. You know, it wasn't like it was in a big crowd. Wester was kind of open. It was passed right to him. Weird. I mean, let's face it. It wasn't a Hail Mary into a group of, you know, 8 players jumping up for the ball. That was a beautiful pass to Wester, and then they won it in overtime.
Iowa 31, Minnesota 14. Only mentioned it because of the Floyd of Rosedale. The pig goes to Iowa City. Minnesota led 14-7 at the half and decided not to show up at home in the second half in this one. Kev, just about the pig, basically, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
Iowa did enough. They ran the ball down their throats.
I mean, it's just one of those, you know, when you're playing for Floyd, when you all these rivalry games, when you're playing for something, it just adds a little more to the game than just a regular game.
Who doesn't want a big win a pig? Just one other I'm going to touch on, actually. And it's going to be James Madison 70, North Carolina 50. Kev, I'm not going to give you anything. You start. Go ahead.
I was flipping around looking for games Saturday afternoon, and I came across this game, and James Madison had 40-something in the second quarter there, and I'm looking at the over going, boy, if you had the over, I think you hit it already. Total yards, UNC 616, James Madison 611. I mean, back and forth, the difference in this game, much like SMU-TCU, UNC with 5 turnovers, James Madison only 1. James Madison had, of course, all the offense, plus they had a blocked punt for a touchdown, a pick six for a touchdown. I mean, when it gets to be that high, it's just fun to watch.
53-21 at the half. They had 616 yards of total offense and lost by 20 points. I don't think I've ever seen that in my life.
No.
I just thought it was interesting. So those are the games that from last week. Couple things just coming up for this week, just to touch on the big slate. There's about 5 games here that make sense for us to talk about a little bit. Oklahoma State, Kansas State. This is 20 versus 23. Both teams have coming off a loss. Kansas State at home in this one. They've lost 4 out of 5 to Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State struggles stopping the run. Kansas State runs the ball well. It's going to be interesting to see how this one goes. Any thoughts on that? Or, I mean, it's just that's the way I see this matchup here.
Yeah, 2 teams coming off a loss. Both need the win, obviously, to stay alive there in the Big 12. Being on the road there, I think Kansas State's going to pull this one out.
It's going to be interesting to
it's
see.
It should be a good one. Yep.
Noon on Saturday. 15 Louisville heads to 16 Notre Dame in a game that means – I'm sorry, Gino. Go ahead. You raised your hand.
I actually agree with Kev on it. I agree with Kev. I think Kansas State probably comes back and plays a good game. You know, I think they unraveled last week with the three touchdowns off turnovers in like 4 minutes against BYU. which led to them just being completely blown out. But yeah, I think Kansas State could come back in this one.
Yeah, the team that loses this game is probably out of any chance of getting into the playoff. And that's something that's so important now that it got up to 12 teams. These two teams would probably never be considered for a playoff normally. Now they have a shot. It means something. 15 Louisville heads to 16 Notre Dame. Kev, something's got to give. We got a great running offense against the third best running defense in the country. Can the Irish keep their running game going? Because the passing game hasn't been there.
Obviously they have to. I think they're going to find a way to get it running. I think Leonard's got to do just enough and give Notre Dame the win here.
One that most people won't talk about, but I'm going to do it because it's close enough. 26th ranked Wazoo at 25, 5th ranked Boise State. I think it's a start of like a new Pac-12 rivalry in a couple of years. You have the explosive running and passing of Boise State. Washington State's more of a throw it around the yard team. I think Boise State's a little bit better defensively. Kev, any thoughts on this one?
This game's going to be a fun game to watch. I mean, you want offense? I mean, this game's going over. I think we'll both agree on that one. 45-42, I think, is going to be around the final.
Yeah, so, I'd bet over at 80 or below. I'm being honest. I would bet over 80 or below. Number 19, Illinois, undefeated again, heads to Penn State. Number 9, Franklin calling for a semi-whiteout game because their whiteout games are scheduled and it's not this week, but he wants that kind of atmosphere in State Park and Joe Pauland. Thoughts on this one, Kev?
Illinois is off to such a good start, and they're huge underdogs here. I think they're going to be able to play with Penn State.
I do too, actually. Olmeyer played awful last year against them. I think he bounces back a little bit. And then in the big one, Gino, Bryant Denny Stadium. Tuscaloosa, Alabama. We've got second-ranked Georgia. Kirby Smart leading the way. Kalen DeBoer's first year at Bama. Fourth-ranked, Crimson Tide, 80,000 people screaming, Roll Tide, under the lights in Alabama. Gino, who do you like? Who wins this game? Who wins the big one this week? This is the biggest game of the year. This is not the biggest game of the week. This is 4-2, the two most marketable programs in the country, or two amongst them anyway, two of the top three. This is as big as it gets. This is a regular season must-watch game in September, which you don't get very often. Gee, who do you like? Spread out last I saw was 2. Georgia, 2-point favorite on the road.
Yeah.
They are a 2-point favorite. Carson Beck leads the way in this one. Georgia takes the win, covers the points. They were number 2 this week, number 1 in the coaches' poll. I think after this week, they may move to 1. We'll see, but I like Georgia -2. Kev?
Yeah, both teams coming off the bye week. 2 weeks ago, of course, remember the reason Georgia fell from number 1 is because they had that rough game. They squeaked by Kentucky 13-12 2 weeks ago. Like I said, both teams have last week off, so I think they're going to be both well prepared for this game. The key to me is going to be, can Georgia stop Milroe's running attack? If Milroe can get out there and make plays with his feet, I think Alabama gets a big lift there. And being under the lights in Bryant-Denny, in Alabama, Alabama's a underdog at home. I'm taking Alabama. Roll Tide.
I'm with you. Georgia's only weakness so far has been their 42nd against the run in the country, which isn't brutal. But for Georgia, it's brutal. And it's all going to come down to Milroe. It really does come down to Milroe. So if Milroe can use his legs, because if he has time to throw, he can throw it down the field. But if he can use his legs, I think that Alabama finds a way to win. I'm with Kevin. I got to take the points at home for Alabama. I think Georgia is probably better on a neutral field. I think because it's in Alabama, I think this is the game Alabama steals and gets in there. Again, this is the team that struggled with USF 2 weeks ago. They haven't been outstanding, but I think they're going to do enough under the lights, and this is a statement win and game for DeBoer. So I'm going to go with Alabama. Gino, who are your other two games?
First one is, we touched on them, Kansas State -4.5 against Oklahoma State. We talked about why. I think Kansas State has a bigger bounce back after the loss than Oklahoma State. Kansas State -4.5 is my first choice. My second choice is USC -16. I think USC rebounds from last week's loss to Michigan, and they take advantage of Wisconsin going all the way to the West Coast, first time back to LA Memorial Coliseum since 1966. I like USC minus the 16 points. Kev?
I'm going to start off on one of the new regional rivalries that are created with the Big Ten. I'm talking, of course, Washington at Rutgers. Friday night, under the lights, in Piscataway, New Jersey. I think Rutgers is going to be up for this game. I mean, this is a standalone game. This is on Fox. This is national TV. If this is not a game for Rutgers fans to show up, for the Rutgers football program to show up and put a statement that they are to be taken anywhere seriously in the Big Ten, if they can't pull it off Friday night, then forget them. the spread's only 2.5. I mean, that's a field goal. I'll take Rutgers minus the 2.5 under the lights Friday night against Washington. And my third game, there are a couple I was looking at. I like Colorado plus 14.5 on the road at UCF. I think Colorado's going to score to keep up. But I think going back to one of the games we touched on earlier, I don't see how the 19th ranked team in the country, Illinois, is getting 19 points on the road at Penn State. Penn State will win. I wouldn't be surprised if Penn State won by 10 to 14 points, but I think 19 is just too many. I'm taking Illinois plus 19.
Okay, so you Kev took two of mine and Gino took one of mine. So now I'm moving around here a little bit. I like Illinois, I like Rutgers, and I like Kansas State. But I am going to go with Ole Miss laying 17.5 at home against Kentucky. I just think that that Ole Miss is more explosive offensively than Georgia. Not as good defensively, but more explosive offensively. And I'm not sold on Kentucky's offense to be able to keep up. So I'm going to take Ole Miss to kind of win this one going away. You know, listen, I'm torn because I want to take Fresno State plus 2 because the UNLV quarterback has stepped away. And the spread went down, I think, from 4 to 2 last I saw. It might even be less by now. But I think that's cheap because if he comes back and plays, then I don't like the bet. I'm going to go Big Ten also. I'm going to take Michigan State getting 23.5 at home against Ohio State. Yeah. Michigan State's been pretty good. They lost in the rainstorm in BC last week in a game that they led most of the way. But BC's pretty good. I don't think Michigan State's going to win the game. I just think that they're going to be able to be competitive on Saturday night. So I'm going to take the Sparty plus 23.5. And those are my three picks for the week. Gino.
All right. Let's go over to some baseball. Yankees and Mets right here at the end of the season. In the American League, Yankees, Cleveland, Houston, Baltimore are all in the playoffs. In the National League, the Dodgers, the Phillies, Milwaukee, and San Diego all in the playoffs. San Diego got in last night by making a triple play to end the game.
Yeah,
just a little note there, Darren.
Round the horn. Otani on deck, by the way. Otani on deck.
In the NL, three teams for two spots. In the AL, it's pretty much four teams for two spots. It's going to come down to the wire. We're going to see it play out. Yankees still have not clinched because they lost again tonight to Baltimore.
It's not
let's
over
start
yet.
With the Mets.
It's not over yet. They're down moment, two. It's not over yet.
Judge just went yard. Make it 9-7. All right.
9-7. Okay. Let's start with the Mets. At the moment, before today's games, they are in a dead heat with Arizona for the last spot. Atlanta half a game back. Half a game back. Kev, start it off.
Well, the Mets were actually half a game in front of Arizona. I'm not sure Arizona's playing today.
They are playing tonight. I just don't know. I don't think they started. They might have just started.
They're playing San Fran, okay. And then they've got three this weekend against San Diego. San Diego really, the Mets' best situation here is for San Diego to beat the Dodgers again tonight, close that up, and give San Diego a chance to win that division going into the weekend. Make San Diego have something to play for to take care of Arizona to knock them down. The Mets have the tiebreaker over Arizona. Mets are playing in Milwaukee. Milwaukee's got the division. likely the 3C. They still have an outside chance of the 2. What's going to come down to, they've got rained out tonight and tomorrow night in Atlanta. They will be playing, if necessary, a doubleheader Monday after the season ends, and then have to immediately, if they need to play games, fly wherever they're going to play Tuesday in a day game somewhere, because Major League Baseball is not putting any games on Tuesday night against the vice presidential debate. So there is a chance the Mets could have to, for example, play a doubleheader Monday in Atlanta just to make the wild card, and then possibly fly out to San Diego for maybe a 1 o'clock West Coast game, 4 o'clock Eastern time zone, Eastern game. Boy, the rainouts just really screwed the Mets, I think. Unless, like I said, I think the best chance for them is to hopefully have Arizona fall apart here. Atlanta's got the Royals this weekend. The Royals have just fallen apart. I think the Braves will take care of business against the Royals, assuming A, the Royals can get into Atlanta, and B, that they play Friday night. Atlanta might have to play another doubleheader Saturday. You know, the weather's just creating even more of a interesting scenario down the stretch here in the last couple days of the season. Can the Mets do it? Yeah. They lost the other night to Atlanta, but all year, especially the second half of the year here, the Mets have bounced back. Anytime they've lost, anytime they look like they're dead, they've bounced back. They've risen to the occasion, and I think they're going to do it again. I think somehow, some way, they're going to find their way into the wild card. What do you guys think?
Well, Kev, a quick point. How do you want to set up your pitching now? Who do you want pitching on Monday if you need it? It'll be rest for everybody. But do you want to make sure you have Manaea on Monday? Do you want to make sure you have Manaea and Peterson on Monday? Do you want to just go with the roll?
You got to go with the roll. You got to go Manaea Friday, and then figure out Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be, I guess, Peterson. You could go Severino Sunday, and then it'll be Quintana, McGill, pitching staff on Monday. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's the pitching staff on Monday. And hell, Medina on 2 days rest might have to give you a couple of innings if need be. And then Tuesday, who knows who if they make it to Tuesday, who knows? But you Mets have to play every game like it's a playoff game now. I don't think they have a choice to, because you have no idea what's gonna happen. You don't know if they're playing Monday. If the Diamondbacks fall apart, like I said, I think that's the best scenario, is that the Diamondbacks fall apart, Mets and Braves both get in, and they don't have to play the doubleheader Monday.
Yeah, that's a little bit of wishful thinking. I think you're going to need at least one on Monday. I'm being honest. I don't know if you need both. I think you're going to need one. Yeah. Now, listen, I'm hoping you're right, but right now Arizona's up 2-1 in bottom of the second last I saw.
Are they? Okay.
There's a long way to go. They're home. I thought it was in San Francisco. It's my mistake.
I mean, at this point in the season – unfortunately, they're not going to be able to prepare for future. They have to take every game as it comes. And I think they've got no other choice but to say, Manaea, you're ready for Friday. Manaea, you're pitching Friday. And take it Saturday's Peterson. I think Sunday, Severino. Like I said, that gives you a chance of at least maybe Manaea getting a couple of innings Monday if need be. You know, I don't think there's another choice.
One of the funniest things, well, listening to the Met fans, and you're not wrong when you say it, is that it's all about Manaea. He's been the best pitcher. But, you know, Met fans are like, Manaea versus Sale is like an even matchup.
It's
advantage Mets. It's not. But, I mean, but you listen to, we're going to have Manaea pitching, and Manaea is going to, you know, it's like, you know, listen, you know, if Atlanta has to save their pitches for the week, you know, we don't know how it's going to be. The advantage that the Mets just got is that Sale and Freed are probably going to pitch over the weekend, and they won't be available.
So they're going to be in the same boat. One of them, again, could be the same thing as Manaea, available for a couple of innings, possibly on 2 days rest if the Braves want to push him. But that's about it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I do think the Mets find a way to hold on. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, but they have to play better against the Braves. To be honest with you, they do nothing against this team.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they just need to hang in. I felt all along that either Arizona or San Diego was going to be the team that didn't get in. I'm sticking with that. We'll see what happens now, because it's so close right now with, you know, five games left. So I think this is anybody. Somebody gets hot for the next 3 or 4 days, and it's done. So,
yep.
Mets got to cross their fingers that Arizona doesn't Makes play sense. Well, or just keep playing the way they've been the last month, and you know, get over this Atlanta Brave problem that they keep running into. It seems like,
yeah.
They played well without him, but they need Lindor back. They need Alonso to step up big in these next few games, and they need Nimmo to be big. Yep. It'd be nice if Marte joined them. It really would be, and Winker joined them. But they need that. That's what this team needs right now. They need the offense to get them going. I thought that this team could be good. They are, and now they have a real shot.
Okay.
G.
Yankees. 92-66.
Lost tonight. Just lost.
Darren?
Yeah, they lost. Again, love Stroman going to the rotation, giving up a lot of runs in the first inning. They gave up 17 hits tonight. Listen, they need one win with the last four games to clinch the division, but they're starting to give away the one seed to Cleveland, which I don't like to see. I'm going to talk about last night for a second. Okay, they're down. And all of a sudden, you know, they start making a little rally in the seventh. And then all of a sudden, you know, Soto gets a big hit, score a run. Gleyber gets held up at third. Soto makes the dumbest play ever and tries to stretch it into second, which he gets away with. But it just takes the bat out of Judge's hand. So I don't know why you're doing it. And then Gleyber inexplicably hesitates and then takes off and gets caught in a pickle and tagged out. I mean, Gleyber can't be this dumb. And he's hitting right now. He's a guy that's hitting. He's batting leadoff. He's getting on base. A lot of good things are happening with him. And yet, this is what I have to watch on a freaking Tuesday night, whatever the hell it was. It drives me nuts. And then tonight they go out there. Cortez has to go get tested, so they have to start Stroman. Stroman gets shelled like he does every year in the second half of the year. That's why you could only count on Stroman for the first half of the freaking year. Again, they have I think their lead is a half game over Cleveland now. One in the loss column, 4 games to play. You expect that they'll take one of the games against Pittsburgh, even if they get swept by Baltimore. But, you know, it's like, you know, they have to make you sweat it out. This team is flawed. They might be the best team in the American League, but they're flawed. And that's something that we have to watch for. I don't know. You want to avoid Houston in the early rounds. You want that one seed so you're not playing Houston in that second round. You don't want to play him in a division series, but that's what they're aiming for right now. If they keep losing like this, this team has to turn it on. Judge hit another homer tonight that makes it great, but this last night's stupidity. Sweep in Oakland, they're supposed to sweep in Oakland. It's fine, but you know you can't get swept by Baltimore at home. Boyce, any thoughts?
I agree. This is exactly how you phrased it. I mean, this is it.
Move that didn't make sense to me. I mean, not that he's been up a lot this year, but Ron Marinaccio DFA'd. Isn't he better than Clay Holmes at this point?
Everybody's better than Clay Holmes at this point, but LeBron trusts him.
What? I mean, I looked at his numbers. Last 3 years, 3.22 ERA, 1.19 whip, 11 Ks per 9 innings, walked a few too many guys. You know, 188 batting average, you know, the triple slash is pretty good. What did Marinaccio do that deserves to be DFA'd?
Well, he's no Clay Holmes. I really don't know how to answer it. And then last night with Boone again, by the way, and a critique on the Met lineup. I can't watch Verdugo play over Dominguez. I know Dominguez isn't hitting the ball all over the place, but we know what Verdugo is. He sucks. Dominguez gives me something. I like his approach at the plate. And why the hell are the Mets batting Marte third?
Why is
Nieto's not batting third? What are you doing? What are you overthinking it, Mendy? Stop. Your best players should bat up early. Drop Marte to the back of the order. I mean, Boone's just horrible. Boone defended Torres's bad base running. He's just horrendous. He should, if they don't win the World Series, fire him. Fire him on the spot. Go out there and shake his hand and fire. And you know what? Fire Cashman while you're at it. Invite them both down to the field so the fans can do it. Let us all say you're fired because that's what we want unless they win a World Series. For the Mets, I think Mendoza's been outstanding this year. But don't overthink matchups.
Not according to the Mets fans.
Mendoza is unafraid. Let him play.
Not according to Mets fans. They think he's the worst. He doesn't know how to manage.
Really? I like Mendoza. I think he's been pretty good.
This was looking like the worst team coming out of May, and they've had the best record since June 1st.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a good team.
AL and NL Cy Young races. Scooble and Sale are leading the way. They're actually leading in Triple Crown categories for the pitches. Scooble 5 strikeouts ahead right now, and Sale 5 strikeouts ahead of their nearest. And those are the two categories which probably will determine whether or not they win the Cy Young, the Triple Crown for each division. AL NL stats, just a little. I was looking at something the other day. Through yesterday, okay, through yesterday's final before today's games, Judge and Witt lead in 8 batting categories. There's not many batting categories that these two don't lead. Judge in home runs, RBIs, walks, on base, slugging, OPS. Witt in batting average and hits. He's second in doubles, third in triples. If we put Ohtani into this mix, they lead in 9 categories, by the way. Ohtani at this point, 53 home runs, 55 stolen bases at a 301 average. Only category that these three people basically don't lead in is stolen bases, and Ohtani's only about 10 behind Deli De La Cruz right now. So who knows in 4 games if something else could happen. Do we want to talk anything about Ohtani's crazy game from the other day?
Well, he had a 2-game stretch where he went 9-for-10 with 4 homers, 2 stolen bases, 12 ribbies. I'm sorry, 2 doubles. I'm sorry. 12 ribbies, 6 runs, 3 stolen bases, and a 3,200 OPS.
That's a good month.
He had the 1 game that was great, but he did it back-to-back. It's like, what the hell? It's better than a video game. It's better than anything I've seen on a video game.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous. Listen, I think Lindor's injury hurt his chance at that MVP, by the way.
I think the way, I mean, obviously, Ohtani.
Is it the single greatest performance either of you guys have seen?
In a single game, best I can remember.
It's the best I can think of. I mean, there might have been something fantastic. I just can't think of it. I think it was amazing.
The only thing that I can think of is that game where Mark Whitten hit 4 home runs and had like 13 RBIs going back quite a number of years. That's about the only other one I could think of in a single game performance.
That's the only one that came to my mind too.
And
I mean, and then Whitten cheated on his wife.
Any other baseball thoughts before we move on?
Prostitute. Yeah, I've got 2. CJ Abrams. I don't know if you heard this story.
Hey, Jeff.
Washington National shortstop. So they were in Chicago. He spends the overnight in a casino, checks in at 8 a.m. for a 1 o'clock game. The Nationals get wind of the fact that he was at a casino all night. After the game, they demote him to the minors and basically say, you're not coming back this year. Costing them, you know, about $70,000 worth of contract because now he's demoted. I think the best line was Gary and Keith talking about it during the Met game. And Keith says, 4 o'clock I can understand, not 8 o'clock. And Gary's response, oh, Keith, you sound like you're talking from experience. And, of course, going back to 86 Mets, they were talking about Davey. You know, oh, we had a bed check. Davey would come to the room. He'd look in. If the bed was there, that was a good enough check for him.
It's the way it went back in the day.
The other point, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Hey, listen, we don't want to get into old Michael Jordan stories about going to Atlantic City. So, I mean, you know.
At least he played at night.
Or the golf course with Jeremy Roenick before he has a night game in Cleveland. Anyway, yep. And playing the extra 18. Anyway, we'll get into that another time.
Yeah. Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, if a free agent, if anybody ever...
Kev, what was your other point?
He's talking about it now.
I'll talk about it now. You must be behind me. Rowdy Tellez had a bonus in his contract, $200,000 bonus for 425 plate appearances. The Pirates DFA'd him this week to bring up a couple of young kids for the last 5 or 6 games. He had 421 plate appearances for the year. Pirates claim it's not about the money. Bullshit. The Pirates, you should be embarrassed. You want to bring up the kids? Fine. Give Rowdy the $200,000 as a sign of good faith to show the players, hey, I'm not going to cheap out. I'm not going to be this bad. I mean, we know how bad the Pirate ownership it is. But to cut a guy, I mean, I'm not talking just for Rowdy Tellez. I'm just talking just the optics of it. You're going to cut a guy one game away from $200,000? What the hell are you doing? If I were a free agent, I'd be looking at that ownership and going, I'm not going there. What do you think?
It's despicable. Another despicable one. A's sportscaster doing the sports report goes off on the Oakland A's ownership because of the move to Sacramento, basically saying that this guy has been ducking everybody for years. It won't do an interview, won't talk to the fans, saying he's trying to put the best product out and we just didn't win. Every time he picked a lot, it was the worst lot out there. This guy went off for about 3 minutes during a sportscast, and they actually let him finish the entire newscast because he went so far over because he just went nuts on it. I thought it was interesting. And just Max Scherzer, one last point. He's pitched in 10 games this year. This year he's made $15 million from the Nationals, $30,833,334 from the Mets, and $12.5 million from the Rangers. Not bad, $58.3 million for maybe 10 games.
Wow.
Good for you, Max Scherzer. That would be my last point.
Yep. All right, Jalen.
Anything else, guys?
All right. Let's move over to NFL picks.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, where are we beginning? I'm doing crap, so.
what are the records, Gio?
I'm 1-7, I think. I don't know. 8-1-8.
Okay. So. Kevin is 7-1-1. Darren and Gino are 1-8. Kevin, you have the honors.
All right. First pick. I'm gonna take the Steelers -1.5 at the Colts. Richardson's terrible. I think the Steelers defense is gonna chew them up and spin them out. The Colts are gonna be lucky if they score 10 points. Steelers -1.5. Game two. Both played in big games this weekend. I like the Bills +2.5 at the Ravens. Again, I think the Ravens defense is not playing well. Even if they have the lead in the fourth quarter, they've been so susceptible to giving up big plays and lots of points in the fourth quarter. Hell, even Dallas scored 19 in the fourth there. Buffalo's playing real well. I'm going to take the Bills on the road, getting 2.5 at the Ravens. And my third game, I'm going with the Texans on the bounce back against the Jaguars at home. I think the Texans put that game behind them. Jacksonville just looks like they are lost right now. The spread's under a touchdown. I've got 6.5. I'm taking the Texans -6.5. Guys?
All right. Me or you, G?
Go ahead, Darren.
Okay. I think Gino's behind me. Okay, I'm gonna start. I'm gonna go head to head with you in the start. I'm taking Baltimore laying the 2.5 against Buffalo. I think everybody's overrating Buffalo so much. They should have lost to Arizona. They really should have. They played Miami without Tua, and Tua helped give them the game. I think that Buffalo losing Milano is going to be a big blow for this team trying to stop the run against Baltimore. I think Baltimore finds a way to win this one by at least a field goal. I think they'll win by 7. My second game is I'm taking the Falcons to bounce back at home against the Saints, laying 2.5. I think the Falcons are a better team than New Orleans is. I think that they are a little bit more complete, and I think that they need this one. It's a good rivalry. I think that they'll find a way to end up in front. My third game, I'm going to go Monday night. I'm going to take Detroit laying 3.5 against Seattle. I think Detroit is – I think Seattle's been looking really, really good, but at the same point in time, I don't think they played anybody yet. I think that Detroit will be the first real test that they have, and I think Detroit should be able to win this game by a touchdown. Gino.
I like Detroit there too.
Okay. My first game, I'm going to Thursday night. I'm taking the Cowboys -5.5 against the Giants. Cowboys at 1-2 need to turn this around really quick. This is how they do it. I think this game is kind of a blowout. I know the Giants coming off a good game, but I don't think they have enough to get past this team. My second game, I'm sticking in the NFC East. I am taking the Eagles -2.5 against the Bucks. I think Philly snaps out of it at some point. This is their game to snap out of it. I know they got the win last week, but still didn't look all that great. And my third game, I am taking – you guys both took the teams I liked, but I am going to take the Cincinnati Bengals -4.5 against Carolina. I think this is a get-well game for Cincinnati. This is where they do it. Andy Dalton was great 1 week, but We've seen Andy Dalton, and especially at this, we don't know what Andy Dalton's going to do. Cincinnati minus the 4.5 is my third selection.
All right. It's kind of a homecoming as Andy started off with Cincinnati. But anyway, any other points you guys want to make before you go?
Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever eliminated from the WNBA playoffs.
Anthony Joshua still got knocked out by Dubois this weekend in England.
That was incredible, you know, that knockout. Wow.
It was a great knockout. Enough of Anthony Joshua already. He has a glass jaw. He's not going to beat anybody good. He's just taking paydays now. He's just going to get himself hurt. But anyway, besides that, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin and Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports, a wacky world where the Mets are going to have to play a doubleheader on Monday and perhaps have to fly out less than 24 hours later to play a game on Tuesday in the playoffs because MLB is so classy. Please follow the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Audio Boom, Spotify, whatever you like. We post a lot on social. Like, share, comment. Tell us anything you want us to talk about more. And again, another long show for us tonight. But without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.